The Thousand and One Nights, which is also known as the Arabian Nights, starts off with a king named Shahryar. Things are going pretty well for the king, but then he finds out that his wife, the queen, is staging these elaborate orgies with the servants every time he goes out of town. The king flies into a rage when he finds this out, and he kills his wife. But he doesn't stop there. He decides he's going to take revenge on the entire female sex. He's going to marry a different girl every night, and then have her killed at dawn. He keeps this up until there are almost no girls left in the village. But then a brave young woman named Shahrazad steps up and actually offers herself as the king's next bride. She does this because she has a plan. She actually manages to stay alive night after night by telling the king stories.
When the merchant finished and stopped weeping, the demon said, "By God, I must kill you as you killed my son, even if you eat blood." The merchant asked, "Must you?" The demon replied, "I must," and raised his sword to strike.
The story of Shahryar and Shahrazad is called a frame tale because it contains several other stories. Bonnie Irwin is a professor of English at Eastern Illinois University, and she's an expert on frame tales.
The fact that you have a woman telling stories to preserve her own life, this idea that if she doesn't keep narrating, she will die, I think that's a rather compelling story. There's not a whole lot of content in it aside from that. There's a little bit of setup there at the beginning. But this whole idea that storytelling is crucially important. If frame tales do anything, I think that's what they do, is that they express to the audience, whether it be a listening audience or a reading audience, that stories are crucial to our lives in many ways.
Frame tales started out in India and Persia and then moved through the Middle East. They became popular in Europe during the Middle Ages when writers presented traditional folk tales within original frames. Chaucer had his tales told by a group of people on pilgrimage to Canterbury. In the Decameron, 10 people flee the city of Florence to escape the plague, and they spend 10 nights telling stories. The frame allowed Boccaccio to create an updated setting for old material, and the format also helped him get away with a lot.
He could put an overtly sexual story in this frame, or he could put a politically satirical story in this frame, but the frame somehow provides a buffer for him. He argues in his prologue, and not that anyone necessarily bought this, but he argues in his prologue that this isn't my story. This is just a story I heard from someone else.
Works like the Decameron gave medieval European readers a taste of the Arabian Nights. But Shahrazad's stories became a hit in their own right when translations started coming out during the 18th and 19th centuries. European readers thought the stories were exotic. Writers liked the format because it was different from the formal structures they knew. This type of writing remained popular through the 20th century because authors were experimenting with different kinds of narratives, like having characters look back at past events in conversation or in the exchange of letters. The versatility of the frame also appealed to filmmakers. Movies are full of techniques like the flashback or the dream sequence that suggests that the whole story never happened.
But it wasn't a dream. It was a place. And you, and you, and you, and you were there.
Oh, sure.
But you couldn't have been, could you?
Oh, we dream lots of silly things when we...
No, Aunt Em. This was a real, truly live place.
Television is full of framing techniques. Think of Rod Serling's monologues at the beginning and the end of Twilight Zone episodes, or Carrie's newspaper columns on Sex and the City. And that's the principle at the heart of one of this year's hottest novels, Everything is Illuminated, by Jonathan Safran Foer. The book is built around stories from 3 centuries in Trachimbrod, a shtetl in the Ukraine that was destroyed by the Nazis. The tales are interrupted by the narration of Alex, the Ukrainian translator assigned to guide Jonathan Safran Foer as he looks for his family's roots. The narration jumps back and forth between Safran Foer's stories and letters from Alex, where the translator critiques the shtetl chapters and even suggests changes. The author says having these two narrators who aren't in sync makes the reader feel some distance from the stories of Trachimbrod.
We can read them and say, hey, these are also kind of kitschy in a way, or these are incredibly anachronistic, or there's something postmodern going on here, because we know we're not just in that world. We're also in a contemporary world, which means we are supposed to be involved in the historical sections, but we are also supposed to remain somewhat removed.
The author says this approach helped him write about the Holocaust, a topic that many say is beyond description and interpretation. But then he says he can't imagine writing any fiction without frames.
frames are the way that we see things now. In music, you know, if you listen to like Eminem, it's all about framing. You know, here's who I am. Here's where I come from. Here are the musicians that have come before me. Here are some sounds you might recognize from other songs or from TV shows. Everything is contextualizing for the sake of bolstering it and giving it an additional meaning to do that thing of at once allowing you to be inside of it and outside of it. And it's really got to be true in books as well. I don't think I could write a successful book unless I was using these frames.
For Studio 360, I'm Brian Zumhagen.